I wanted to continue on what we had talked about last week, which is to pick up two more of the seven parables about the kingdom of heaven that we find in the 13th chapter of Matthew's gospel. And I would invite you to hear God's word through Matthew chapter 13, beginning at verse 31. Jesus put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all the seeds, but when it has grown, it is the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches. And he told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed in with 3 measures of flour until all of it was leavened. This is the good news of Jesus Christ. Thanks be to God. Once again this morning, I've included some teaching notes in the bulletin, and I would invite you to follow along as we go through this message together and to write things down as you feel called to do that. As I mentioned, last Sunday, we looked at 2 of these 7 parables in Matthew chapter 13. You know, they're all about the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven, as we saw, is far beyond anything that we can fully capture in words. And so Jesus gives us these incredible word pictures that are simple and memorable, and we can all relate to them, and yet they are so profound that we can hear them over and over again and always grasp some new truth, a truth about who God is or who we are or about the world in which we live. Now, in the 2 parables that we looked at last week, Jesus describes the kingdom of heaven as a treasure hidden in a field and as a pearl of great price. According to Jesus, the kingdom of heaven is the only treasure really worth pursuing. And everything else, he would tell us, pales in comparison. So what he is saying is that whenever you have given your life to him, whenever you have said, Jesus, I want to follow you and I want to do your will, you will experience the kingdom of heaven. You will know his love and his grace and his mercy. You'll have a sense of purpose for your life. And you also will discover that the kingdom of heaven is all around you. Day after day would reveal the glory of God. And not only that, but the kingdom of heaven is a promise for the future. A promise that when we die, Jesus welcomes us into that place where pain and heartache and suffering are no more. And we also have this glorious hope that Christ will come again and reign for all eternity. All of this and more is the treasure, the inestimable valuable pearl, the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus says, if you devote your life to the pursuit of anything else, you will always come up empty. Now today we're looking at 2 more parables of the kingdom. And like the 2 we looked at last week, these are very short. And yet they convey some valuable truths for us. And the first truth that these 2 parables reveal to us, number 1 in your notes, is that the great secret of God's kingdom is that it operates undercover. It operates undercover. God's work in this world is not always so obvious. It is often hidden from view. In the first of the 2 parables, Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone took and planted in his field. It is the smallest of all seeds. The mustard seed is planted in the soil. And if you've ever planted seed in the soil, you know the experience of the gardener in this parable. You bury a seed in the soil, and for a while, you see nothing. Some years ago, when we were serving in Center Hall near State College, our daughter Jennifer's Sunday school teacher gave each child in her class some seeds. And she didn't tell the kids what kind of seeds they were. She simply told them to go home and plant the seeds and water them, and then to enjoy the surprise in a few weeks. Well, as soon as we got home from church, we headed to the flower bed. We dug a hole. We planted the seeds. We covered them over. Every day we would go out with Jen to water the spot where the seeds had been planted. And every day she would look with disappointment at that spot, expecting to see something pop up through the soil right away, and nothing seemed to be happening until one day we saw little signs of life, and Jen was thrilled. And eventually, those seeds that we were given grew to be some beautiful flowers in our flower bed. So it is, said Jesus, with the kingdom of heaven. God's work is not always so evident like that tiny mustard seed hidden in the soil. The second parable makes the same point in a different way. Yeast is hidden in flour. The kingdom of heaven, Jesus says, is like yeast that a woman took and mixed in with 3 measures of flour. Actually, the Greek word that's translated here as mixed in literally means to hide. The woman hid the yeast in 3 measures of flour. And so when you look at that lump of dough, you can't see the yeast. You can't see the ingredient that will transform it into fresh, soft, delicious bread. The kingdom of heaven is like that, Jesus says. God operates undercover. His involvement in this world is not always so evident. Now, reading the Gospels, we understand that the coming of Jesus into this world was like mustard seed and yeast. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, says that Jesus came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. The Word made flesh looked so small in this world. He was born in a stable. He grew up in an obscure village. People who later heard claims that he was the Messiah didn't believe it. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? They asked. His disciples were a motley crew. He lived among the poor, welcomed sinners, touched lepers, said things like, "Blessed are the meek." And the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. On Palm Sunday, he rode into Jerusalem on a humble donkey. He died between 2 thieves on a cross, buried in a borrowed tomb. God did not make a grand entrance into this world. The great secret of God's kingdom is that it operates undercover. Now, most people back then didn't recognize Jesus for who he was, and many people today do not recognize his presence either. When the Russian cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin returned from his historic flight in 1961, he triumphantly announced that having been in the heavens, he had no sign of God there. Now, to this confident atheist, a Russian Orthodox priest was supposed to have said, "Well, if you have not seen God on earth, you will never see him in heaven either." For many of us, that's the challenge. to see God on earth. More and more these days, people are looking at the mess this world is in and concluding that perhaps there is no God. A few years ago, Richard Dawkins, a professor at Oxford University, wrote a book entitled The God Delusion. And Dawkins says that belief in God is a delusion. Ancient peoples believed in God, he said, because they had no other way to explain the world in which they lived. But we are so much better informed today than they were. To believe in God in the 21st century, he says, is childish, wishful thinking. Sadly, his is not the only best-selling book making claims like this. In large numbers, people in our culture are considering the possibility that God is nothing more than a figment of our imagination, a crutch that we lean on. And sometimes, even people of faith struggle to see God on earth. Back in 2007, a book was published entitled Mother Teresa, Come Be My Light. And in this book was a collection of correspondence between Mother Teresa and her confessors across all the years of her ministry. And these letters reveal something very surprising. That though she was always smiling and cheerful in public, Mother Teresa often lived in a state of deep and abiding spiritual pain. She experienced some very dark times in which God seemed hidden from view. Now, in the midst of her struggle, Teresa persisted in prayer. She served among the poor. She touched countless lives with compassion. But there were these dark times for her as well. Now, many people have found great encouragement in reading this book because, like Mother Teresa, even people of faith have seasons in life when we struggle to understand what God is up to. Perhaps some of you are struggling today. You may be looking at the mess this world is in and considering the possibility that maybe there is no God. It seems to you that God is nowhere. Or some of you might be struggling like Mother Teresa did. You cling to faith and try to live the life that God called you to live, and yet you don't always have that sense of God's presence. It's natural for us to have doubts, to look at the sufferings of this present time and wonder where God is in the midst of it all. If you are struggling today, I would invite you to hear the powerful message of Jesus in these two parables. Because these two parables show us that the unexpected tiny beginning of the kingdom should not obscure the greatness of the kingdom. God may be operating undercover, but God is still operating. In fact, the results are miraculous. According to the first parable, the tiny mustard seed becomes a ubiquitous shrub. Isn't that a great word? Ubiquitous. That means that it is everywhere. Jesus says that that tiny mustard seed experiences amazing transformation, pushing its way up through the soil, growing to be the greatest of shrubs. If you don't cut it back, it will keep growing and growing and growing until it takes over the entire garden. In fact, Jesus says the shrub becomes a tree that provides shelter for the birds. And the yeast produces an incredible abundance of bread. That little pinch of yeast is a dynamic force that will cause the lump of dough to rise and keep working until the entire loaf is filled. Now, did you notice in this second parable how much flour the woman hid the yeast in? Jesus says that she hid it in 3 measures of flour. 3 measures of flour is the equivalent of 50 pounds of flour. This woman is making an enormous amount of bread, enough to feed at least 150 people. The mustard seed, the yeast, they all point to the truth that Jesus is a dynamic force of change in this world. Near the end of the book of Revelation, where the Apostle John is sharing with us the picture of God's future as it shall be, he says this, "And the one seated on the throne said, 'See, I am making all things new.'" Now notice what he doesn't say. Jesus doesn't say, "See, I am making some things new." He says, "I am making all things new." The promise is that Jesus is not going to transform just some things and leave other things as they are. Jesus is not going to stop working until each of us and the world in which we live is transformed. Notice also that Jesus doesn't say, "See, I will make all things new." He says, "I am making all things new." The present perfect tense. The transformation is already underway. The plant is already beginning to break through the ground. God is already moving. He's already moving in your life. He's already moving in the life of the church and in His church in every part of the world. God is already moving to make all things new. Now here's the last thing to be said today about these two parables. And that is that the greatness of the kingdom is visible to Jesus' disciples. The greatness of the kingdom is visible to those who know and follow Jesus. Earlier in this 13th chapter of Matthew, the disciples ask Jesus, "Why do you speak in parables? Lord, why don't you just say what you have to say? What's up with these strange stories you tell?" And Jesus says to them, "The reason I speak to them in parables is that seeing, they do not perceive, and hearing, they do not listen, nor do they understand." Now look at the distinctions Jesus makes. There's a difference between seeing and perceiving. To perceive is not just to see something, it is to look at it and to understand what it means. And to listen is not just to hear words, it is to really understand what is being communicated. Seeing and hearing are on the surface, perceiving and listening go deep. Those who only see and hear in this world will say things like, "Look at this mess. How can there be a God?" But those who understand experience life differently. They're sensitive to the painful realities with which we all live, but they are also aware of a greater reality. And they see, even sometimes in ways that others do not see, that Jesus is already at work to make all things new. Those who perceive and listen are able to declare with the Apostle Paul, I am confident of this, that the one who began a good work among you will bring it to completion by the day of Jesus Christ. Where does Paul find confidence like that given his circumstances? Paul knows Jesus. Those who know Jesus are awake to what God is up to in this world. And so my question for you this morning is this. Do you know Jesus? I'm not talking about simply knowing about Jesus. I'm talking about a relationship with Jesus. I'm not talking about simply seeing, but perceiving, not just hearing, but really listening. I'm talking about being deeply rooted in a day-to-day relationship with the Lord of life. You know, our relationship with Jesus develops in the same way that our relationships with other people develop. You can't develop a relationship with someone. You can't really get to know them if you do not spend time together. You get to know Jesus by spending time with Jesus. And here's the thing. Jesus is always spending time with you. He's always there for you. He's forever seeking, even in this moment, to speak and to listen to you. Are you sensitive, attentive to His gracious invitation? The great secret of the kingdom of heaven, Jesus tells us, is that it often operates undercover. But like the tiny mustard seed that grows into a tree, like the yeast that leavens the whole loaf, God is at work. God is at work in your life and in mine. God is at work in the life of our church. God is at work in the world. God is at work to make all things new. What will you do? How will you respond to find a deeper relationship with the one who is making all things new? As we sing our closing hymn this morning, a great hymn of promise, I invite you to have your heart and your mind open to the presence of the one who is forever making all things new. Amen.